The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! One of the Tigers! Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks!
Oh, jeez.
He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh?
Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yep. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is the play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain in Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. At champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals you can make the case for being best on ground.
I think they were a better team last year than they are now.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we're back. This is our second of our podcast classics. If you missed the first one, the idea being we go back and look at old games from before we did a show and trying to recreate the magic and, you know, just sort of pay tribute to Tiger teams of old.
Yeah, and you can never quite recreate the joy and frustration of following the Richmonds in the middle to end of last decade. And the Terry Wallace era, well, it was nice. It's nice going back because actually the team is still a lot of fun. But, you know, as we were just discussing offline, there are no happy endings at the end of the season for Richmond in these stories.
No. So, the game we're doing, it's round 17, 2008. The season is delicately poised. The game's at Docklands. Brisbane are 7th. We're 10th. 6th. No? 6th? Huh? Richo is playing on a wing, on his way to close but no cigar. Brownlow finish. The team itself is on its way to finish 9th. And what a team it was! Did you?
But we've and just to set a bit.
It's a great game.
It is a great game. We've just won 4 of the last 5. Including an absolute classic against St Kilda with the famous walking backwards. Against Essendon.
Essendon,
with the Joel Bowden walking backwards moment. So there's a lot of excitement around the Tigers, and we're going in to play the Lions. You know, a top 8 team. Still, Lee Matthews is still coaching, and it's pretty much a clash of the near heavyweights. Probably as close as we came to a heavyweight for a while.
Yeah, so I'd recommend everyone go off and watch it. It's on YouTube. It is a game to watch. For people conditioned on the current Richmond team in particular, it's very different.
Well, I mean, there are so many different ways you could have put it, but what was the thing that stood out to you? Firstly, Nick, you know, the very first clearance of the game, Dan, you know, bit of a, it's a great clearance team, by the way, but bit of an arm wrestle, then Dan Jackson gets it out. Nathan Brown's running beautifully to get the release hand pass and deliver the ball into the forward line, except Dan Jackson misses Nathan Brown by at least 2 metres with the hand pass.
So this team was fifth in the AFL for scoring, but it was also fifth in the AFL for giving up points, and that was despite the Terry Wallace style, where as we know that they could wax and wane a lot, you know, they're getting the ball half back and then looking upfield, nothing's free, kick the ball backwards, repeat. Like, God, idiot.
So we had 100 more disposals.
So boom or bust, it feels like.
It is. Well, it's partly it's who's playing, but we had 100 more disposals and only four more inside 50s, which, if you think about it, is the almost exact opposite of the current team, which will often win the inside 50s, having 50 less disposals. But the team was a real, like, just talk about who was playing that day. The team was, you could see what they were trying to do is that there was two clear generations. There was a young group, you know, Koch and Edwards. Edwards was not quite up to the speed of the game yet, but, you know, Cochin was already cameoing. Lids was there, and Tambling was highly competent. You know, you'd still believe he would be a good player there. So it was sort of a team where it had the young stars coming up and some fading, that they were trying to bolt together the fading stars of the 2001 team, Joel Bowden and Richo obviously standing out, and Kane.
Well, we had both five players over 30, as you said, Richo, Bowden, Simmons, Kane Johnson. Nathan Brown.
Yeah, Nathan Brown. And which is extraordinary when you consider this is a team that basically had never made finals, 7 years, 6 years is forever. So to be that old and not very good is obviously suboptimal.
Well, but it also has, we have five players from the 2004 draft with Lids, Tambling, Adam Patterson as backup ruck, Luke McGaughan on and Will Thursfield, as you mentioned, Cochin, Edwards, baby Jack Reewald running around. So it's a real donut team, which is a phrase I'm fond of. Like, there's this older stars, young stars, and a few smattering of 20-somethings like Axel Foley and Shane Tuck in the middle.
Yeah, and look, it's not if you look at the Wallace era, it's not like they are making admirable effort to bring along the young players. You know, the Richo out to the wing move. Yes, it regenerated Richo. Yes, it was also partly a move of desperation because the team wasn't very good, but also it was a deliberate attempt to get Jack quality game time. Because Richo just, it was very difficult to play as a second tall next to him. So, you know, and they're playing.
Well, Jack and Jay Schultz. And I want to talk about Jay Schultz.
Yeah. And look, they're making an effort to play young players even when they're probably not ready. Like, Shane Edwards doesn't look quite ready for the game. The magic's not quite there yet for him. But they're making an effort. They're trying to bring along the young players while still having one last roll of the dice with the old guys. So essentially it's a bet each way team if you're looking at a list building strategy.
And you understand. And why as well? Richo's huge. I hadn't quite fully appreciated how gigantic, like, career Richo is. So he's 4 centimetres shorter than Toby Nankervis, but the same weight. Like, he's a big boy. But still incredibly mobile. And that's such a captivating figure as well. He gets his first touch on a half back flank on a switch, and the crowd bursts into a Richo chant.
I noticed, that's right. It was a meaningless switch, and already the crowd's it breaks into a Richo chant. And not only that, he then, I don't know if he reacts to the crowd or just the crowd loves him, because after he gets that cheap switch, he runs out, makes the most unnecessary hard run to get the second hand pass to get involved again in the chain, which just big men would never do.
Yep.
They never have and never will. But in some way, because Jonathan Brown's quite good in the game as well. It's like watching the Battle of Jutland, like the last time, like sort of these great old battleships, they're dignified and they're sort of already a bit past their prime, but seeing them, seeing the last sort of era of football where these guys were, the kings of the field.
Well, really, really pure power forwards.
Exactly.
Who get to play one out a lot.
Yes. And, cause, the Daniel Bradshaw is really influential in the game as well. They play. It's just a different era. Like it is like watching. You expect them to sail past the Queen at any time so she can salute them. It's good fun to watch, and it is different football. And I do think, like, going to the Terry Wallace game style, like there. So Richo's great and he's athletic, and in some ways it's. It also feels like a team that's built around the flaws of some of the older players. Like, it has a lot of players like Kane Johnson and Brown and Richo, and as athletic as he is, he can't really turn at all. Well, he can't turn very well, and he can't play defense. Like, he can play loose man defense, but a lot of the players are old and sort of slow in a defensive sense. So you can't. They couldn't play one-on-one football. They play a very defensive zone style. But I'm not sure that, and you have Joel Barton as well, I'm not sure that team could have played that sort of hard-running one-on-one football that the team these days play. They almost, because they've got so many older players and slower players, that they have to play this full team defence that they play.
Oh, well, that was one thing. I hated the zone that they played. I just was really soft.
Even
when it was fully set up, it seemed to rely on the other team making mistakes. So yeah, they don't run particularly hard both ways. But actually, I didn't have quite the same, because I think you can have, our forward press doesn't really rely on Tom Lynch to be effective. I think. Just the balance of the team. So going inside forward 50 was so mark heavy that unless we mark the ball, there's a little bit of Matty White causing chaos when the ball hits the ground. But otherwise, there's no crummers, there's no pace applying defensive pressure. Like, there's some extremely skilled players, but they don't. But there's no balance to it,
I agree with that, but I think that's part of the I just don't think this team could have played one-on-one football if you wanted it to. It just has a lot of skillful players.
A bit, but it's also a choice. So they've bought in 20-year-old Mitch Morton at the end of the previous year for a third round draft pick. They've bought in Jordan McMahon to run off half back for a second round draft pick.
Yeah, we're going to talk about him.
But I think so that they've chosen that type of player. So that the forward line. I mean, as I said, they were fifth in the AFL for points scored. There was nothing wrong with their ability to kick goals in bunches as they do in this game, but there's no they. So they rotate through some combination of of Jack, Richo, Nathan Brown, Mitch Morton, Jay Schultz, Troy Simmons, and so the incredible array of marking talent, but no pressure when the ball hits the ground. I think the team balance is just off. There's not enough. Well, and our one ballers certainly have grunt, but again, you can question how much they run two ways other than Dan Jackson.
Yeah, and look, actually, one of my key takes was...
I think it was a deliberate choice. Sorry. It was a deliberate choice by Terry Wallace to have this style of team, I think, was my conclusion, because why else recruit so many of this type of player?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it does... Like, once you're playing Nathan Brown as a small forward, like you almost that era of Nathan Brown, Cam Johnson's one of your key midfielders. You've still got Richo, who's still the game's still all about Richo. You're almost you're in some ways locked into that game plan. But I take your point about someone like Mitch Morton. You then don't have to play Mitch Morton as well, but perhaps because the other thing about this game plan is, you know, when it works, it works. Like, it beats.
When it is on, it is fantastic to watch.
One of the key things about this game that it really, I remember thinking about the time, and partly it was because the good Brisbane teams that defined that era, is that what matters most is having a good midfield, and our midfield's okay.
They have a very, yeah, and they've got a Brownlow medalist in Zon Blank and Luke Power and yeah, so McGrath.
But you can sort of see. Through. I think this team is fatally flawed by the midfield. Our midfield's just okay. Like incredible, yeah. Has an incredible clearance game, but you can just see it getting blown away by a good midfield with hard running two way players who are fast.
Oh, it's completely devoid of star talent.
Exactly.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. It's got a whole lot of sort of players who have one or two great strengths, there's no one there who's and probably the best all round player is Nathan Foley, and with the greatest respect to Foley, aside from one season, he was never a star.
No. Look, Kane Johnson's more in a half forward role, and he's very good in a half forward role. Like, he's 24 disposals a game for the season and rated as one of the best kicks inside 50 in the AFL. So yeah, he's still a good player, but you know, always a bit of a complimentary player.
And you know, getting to the point about defence, he records zero tackles in that game with 31 disposals. Yeah. And he's very immobile. Like, he's good when you kick the ball to him and then he gets to use it, but he's not running anyone down, he's not closing any space. He's deeply, there's a moment in the game where Lids misses a tackle to him, misses a hand pass to him, and he turns around and gives Lids a filthy look. And actually on the replay, as the commentators point out, he would have got it. He just extended out a little bit and he can't because might remember his hamstrings were stuffed, and he was very clever at playing, you know, not extending that extra, sort of playing within himself to protect his body. But you know, his body's not allowing him to do the things that the premiership winning Kane Johnson could do.
Yeah, he's still a good player. Joel Bowden's just fascinating. It's the week before the game against Essendon. This one he wins the game when he switches forward to be yet another marking target inside forward 50. He's still a really good kick. I think he's first in the AFL for uncontested marks for this season. But Yeah, he's. I thought he doesn't run very hard defensively on that list.
I do think, yeah, and can't get round a corner with his pace, which is something you really notice with Nathan Brown. Is that they're trying to use him because he's a great kick, but Brown is so slow that once he gets it, he can't get round the corner a lot. Like when he's got space, he's kicks the ball a couple of times beautifully, and the commentators love it. But there's a lot of other times where he gets the ball as the outside receiver, and because he just lacks that yard of pace, he has to kick around the corner, or under heavy pressure, and it's not as an effective kick as it would be with a less skillful player, but it still has a yard of pace. But it is interesting on the, you know, there's an effort to play the kids, and you know, there's you know, as you pointed out, Richo starts on the wing. I don't even think he starts on the field, does he? He comes off the bench. But when the game's there to be won, in the last five minutes, when Richmond's down by two goals, who is Terry Wallace playing in the forward line? Richo and Bowden, you know. Alright, it's, but playtime is over. We need to win a game. The old.
Well, and I put it to you that decision was completely justified. Like, he's a beast.
Richo.
He's still...
Oh, yeah, I love it.
He's still fast.
And the whole game is about
him. He's still a great mark. Oh, yeah. And I felt so much for the spectators who, when he takes a mark 20 metres out, just bury their head in their hands until he kicks it.
Yeah, which because for people who don't remember, and spoiler alert, sorry, we come back, we're two goals down with 3 minutes to play, and if you're at the ground, and also on the TV, they didn't have the countdown clock at the time, and it looked like the game was almost about to end. So it feels like there's only 30 seconds to play, so the comeback's even more amazing. And, Richo, he kicks the first of the two goals, 25 metres out, straight in front. It's a pretty tense moment.
It's heart in mouth stuff. This is Nathan. This is for this whole generation of older players that are on their last legs. All of them but Troy Simmons are gone. So we are 13 months away from Damien Hardwick being appointed, and all of Brown, Bowden, Richardson, and Johnson are all gone the next year. Troy Simmons limps through the first year of the Damien Hardwick era before he's replaced by Angus Graham in the battle of well-oiled Super Jack Druckmann.
Yeah, now, and on Simmons, like, perhaps occasionally forgotten by Richmond fans. So we lost the hit-outs by minus five. Okay, no big deal. It's pretty even. Smashed them in the clearances. But while Jamie Charman had nine touches, the, number one Brisbane Ruck, Troy Simmons had 25 disposals. That's an extraordinary high number.
Yeah, he was second in the AFL for Ruckman for disposals for the season. Yeah, he was pretty good.
And just for a change while I'm talking about Rucks, and Pato, who was vaguely competent, had 13 disposals around the ground, 7 hit-outs. There was a moment where it was early in the game, and he's in the centre square, and it's a beautiful bounce, and it goes straight up, and Pato's got perfect technique, and he runs up, sticks his knee in the air, and he just doesn't get high. He's got no jump, and he doesn't get off the ground, and the other ruckman jumps over the top of him and gets a tap. And then a few minutes later, he does something. He dives headfirst into a pack and gets a free kick. And I felt such sympathy for him, because that the fatal flaw of not being able to jump, and try to make up for it later by sticking your head over the ball. Nick, that's exactly how I ruck as well. So, I felt such sympathy for him and saw in all his flaws and why he didn't make it in the AFL all the reasons why I played second grade.
But if you watch this game, you'd be so he's a 21-year-old ruckman, and he's quite a competent backup ruck. Like, he takes a few nice marks. He has 13 disposals.
And did you notice the ground ball he got on the center clearance, which he hand passed to, believe, Shedder? That it was sort of when he was running in, and he picked the ball off his feet. The commentators didn't even call his name, but it was an act of real high skill for a big man.
Yeah, like there's nothing to indicate. Well, actually, there is.
Yeah. Is the fact he can't jump?
Well, he can't jump. But if you tell me that, he compensates it by getting really good at everything else he does do, and he goes on the Angus Graham workout regime, and gets super big and starts pushing people around. You certainly wouldn't rule him out on the basis of this performance.
Mate, I little bit think it's a fatal flaw, because, I like to say Nack can't jump. Nack can jump hard and Paddo can jump. Nack would be Patterson if he was rocking against him all day, which obviously, but anyway. You were definitely right that perhaps I agreed absolutely to the point. He's actually better than I remember him to be. Like, as you say, he's quite confident in the game.
I think this is one of his better games. You know who's really good?
You're going to say Richard Tambling, aren't you?
Not quite really good. Lids is really genuinely good.
Yes.
He kicks 28 goals for the year. He's 25 disposals a game. Champion data has him in their All Australian team, even though he's he doesn't make the actual All Australian team. And he's really good. He looks like he's going to be a star. And at 21.
And absolutely. And Cochin's only has 11 touches, but as that sort of error Trent Cochin did, he did a couple of things where the commentators went, "Fwah!" You can see...
Yeah, he's in his, what, 10th game?
Yep.
So it's very baby Trent Cochin.
But you can see the green shoots of what will be the heart of the team of the next decade. Until 2016. Lids is clearly absolute silk. You know, with Tambling has one of his best games of his career, 27 touches, and actually sets up the winning goal and a beautiful bit of repeat running. But with the benefit of the hindsight, Nick, you can also see why he doesn't make it in the end.
Yeah, I was wondering, but you certainly wouldn't know it at this point. So the first 5 years of Richard Tambling's career, he goes from 9 disposals a game to 12 to 14 to 17 to 21.
Like, yep.
Everything about that says his career is going to be a success, even though there's still more mistakes than you'd like, and he gets caught with the ball more than you'd like from someone who's pretty quick. He wins the game with the last forward 50 entry. The radar's still off a bit at times. Like, he's tantalising, but you'd happily convince yourself, and I'm sure we did at the time, that he's improving. He's improving every year. He's really taking. He's got the confidence to take the game on.
Yep.
He's still losing his man. More than you'd like, but he's 20. Again, he's 21. You'd expect there's plenty of scope for him to improve.
Yeah, and like, his confidence is right up on this game, as you say. Mm. Like, he's really taking on the game, and he's playing against a Brisbane team that has some other spuds on it too, as well, by the way, we should say. He's
trying. Yeah, they're quite late era as well.
Yeah, exactly. He's trying to take the game on. You know, he believes in himself. You can tell he's been coached up to, you know, play like Andrew McLeod, just put your head down and bolt. But he has two sort of, and again, completely with hindsight, he has two fatal flaws that, you really notice on tape. The first is, he's trying to play like, he runs away from packs like he's as fast as, Rioli is, and he's not. And he doesn't have the awareness. He's not quite far. The awareness speed combination isn't sufficient to. He gets caught too often. He gets caught a lot. And it's sort of it. And the way he's getting caught means it's holding the ball and it's a turnover when you've got the breakaway. So it hurts. And the second thing is, he doesn't have great hands in close. Occasionally he does stuff, but he fumbles quite a lot in contested.
He fumbles more than you'd like.
You can just say it. If you look on Twitter, I posted it. We'll talk about Luke McGuan in a sec, but Luke McGuan puts on this huge hit, and it's just good fun. After doing a spoil, but another Richmond player might have been Brown, might have been Johnson, or might have been Bowden, I think. Picks up the loose ball, you know, quick thinking, and hand passes it straight to Bling, who Bling's ready to run off. Mm. He drops the ball, and he does. It's just the end of the video, but he just does little stuff like that a lot. But yeah, I mean, he still has 27 touches, and like, as you say, you convince yourself that he's not as good as Lids, but he's going to be an important player for the future.
Yeah, he's certainly good. He's one of our best players on the day. So we've talked a lot about the older players and their flaws. I put it to you, one of the other flaws of this team is that Kel Moore is their best defender. And he's under-qualified for that role.
Yes. The back line is interesting, but it's not getting much help from the, like, you can see why they sag back a lot, because it's not a great back line.
No, it's not great. It's long on marginal talent key defenders. Will Fairfield, Kel Moore, Luke McGuan, the running halfbacks in, Chris Newman, who's sort of peak career and second in the AFL for kick rating. But yeah, him and again, there's, I don't know, maybe perhaps it's the era of the football as well. But we really lack. Do you remember when us having a decent defensive back pocket was a thing? Like Stephen Milne kicking a million goals against us every time. Well, yeah, we've got that as well.
Yeah, so a back pocket who can both defend and release. Like, you can actually see why they brought Jordan McMahon into this team, because he is.
Yeah, they need the run out of the back line.
Yeah, they do. It's a bit static, and they do have a lot of. You know, you've got a real problem. They got a couple of guys who, like, you know, Thurstfield and McMahon, and it's
none of that. Yeah, Kilmore's not a bad kick, but yeah, Thurstfield and McGuan aren't allowed to kick the ball.
No, and Newman's a wonderful kick, but actually I'll come back to Newman. But McMahon, like, he makes sense, but the problem is a as you sort of alluded to, he's no good defensively. So he's a one dimensional player, and the worst thing about it is his one dimension isn't that good. Like, he's not that good a kick.
He's good, but he's not, like, he's a good kick. He's a long kick, and sometimes it works really well. But yeah, he coughs it up too much to be this. So he finishes eighth in the best and fairest, and 23 disposals a game. So you wouldn't. He just coughs it up too much. Like, everything about this team is sort of tantalising and flawed.
Yes, Yeah, and like, and I love how he runs in straight line. Like, obviously, when there's an enormous amount of space and no opposition players around, but he does. And I did notice there was, I saw him noticeably take short steps at least once. I do love the way he runs with the football. He runs really hard and he bounces nicely. But yeah, he's there to kick the ball and he turns the ball over too often. He doesn't. One thing really strikes me about Newman's kicking is it's not always perfect, but it's really, really well weighted. And you know, that's a thing I love about Vossi's kicking as well. McMahon, Geordie, I was just thinking, is it Geordie or is it McMahon? Geordie's kicking is not. It's not well weighted. He does occasionally get excited and kick the ball over the head of someone. And twice it causes horrendous turnovers, which just must be so deflating for the team. Nick, Luke McGowan.
Yes.
I think he has more highlights and more horrendous moments than in every game than Asprey has in half a season. So he does amazingly good things and amazingly terrible things.
He's super high effort.
Yes. And so brave. He may be the bravest Tiger I've ever seen.
He's a pretty good athlete.
Oh, he's a great athlete. He's fast. Athlete,
so he's a, yeah, he's fast and he jumps and he hits the contest hard. And he's mistake prone. Oh, the whole defense.
Yeah, and some of he does one of the worst entries inside 50, I think, of the last 20 years in this game. It's horrendous, but, he bombs at 50 metres in the air and it's the wrong opposite pocket to a 2-on-1 on a small player. And he's just setting up the rebound out of defence. But yeah, he just, like I said, there's a highlight where he punches the ball. He sprints after his own punch. A Brisbane player is unlucky to get it and Luke McGowan, like a heat seeking missile, just blows him up. Absolutely magnificent hit. Creates a turnover, but he does that and he just fearlessly drops back, into incoming, key forwards. But yeah, he's fun to watch, but he's very flawed.
Yeah. Will Thursfield, so this is Will Thursfield's best season. He plays 18 games. He's not good enough. Like Bradshaw, he's playing on Bradshaw to start with, and Bradshaw's very good, and, you know, three-time premiership player. He's pretty flawed.
Yeah, like,
I loved him at the time.
Yeah, and he's trying really hard, and, he's okay defensively, but he's a one-dimensional player again, and his one dimension isn't good enough to get the job done against good teams. Like the whole, I really, and maybe this is again hindsight, but the team does feel, with the exception of a few players, you can kind of see how this team would fall apart, against better teams, and it gets beaten by sort of 5-6 goals the week after. That it's good when you're playing against it. It's good fighting at level and it's really exciting and it's a great team to watch, but, there's too many forward players and the midfield's not good enough to, beat really good teams. I will say about Newman, I really noticed his kicking was high quality, 15 touches, but, I was trying to remember what I thought about, prime Chris Newman, and the one thing about him is, he's not a good inside player. Like, he misses a few, he panics a bit with his hand pass under heavy pressure, that's why, like, you know, people who can play midfield play midfield. That's why Chris Newman was never a midfielder. He's just not a good contested player. But it's not that he's not brave. He just doesn't have that instinct.
No, he's a halfback flanker.
Yeah.
He's better than Bashir Hulman. Like, he's a good player. He's a genuinely good player. I think it's both...
he's a better cook than Bashir. He's a better kick.
Oh yeah, they're both good. He's first on the team in marks from opposition kicks, which we know with the benefit of hindsight, so is a pretty good, it's a pretty useful stat. And that's almost telling that you're 5'11", half back flanks, the best on the team.
Yeah, he's. sorry, were you comparing him to Basher? Did you say, because if you just say something Basher does better is like, so this is a team that's waxing a lot, and Newman only gets 15 touches for the game. Now, the opposition probably sat on him a bit, but Basher's better at finding space. Like, you wouldn't find, in a game where there's a fair bit of waxing, you wouldn't find Basher getting, like,
perhaps.
Basher would love that game. It was that game was totally made for Basher's skill set.
I had the feeling, I want to watch more Terry Wallace to games to get a sense for it. Like, he's a very creative coach. Like, the team moves positions a lot. Like, it rotates a ton of players through the forward line in different roles. Like, there's a lot of coaching going on. But I feel like I didn't feel like the team as a whole was well coached. Like, that whole, I didn't feel like they played as a team particularly well. And maybe that's having, you know, lots of young players with lots of old players, that it's hard to be that really cohesive, hard running unit, with so many, flawed players. But,
yeah, so, and there's a bit of a, and there's quite a few misfit toys on the team, isn't there? So you're trying to get them in the position where they can succeed. But yeah, I really felt the same way.
But this was a team that had chosen those misfit toys. I mean, they don't have enough talent. Like, they went. I think 4 out of 5 years. At the turn of the decade, trading away first round. Draft picks that completely whiff. This is 2008. And the only player from the 2005 draft is Matty White from the preseason draft. Like, the team's recruiting's that is flawed, and the team itself is flawed and under-resourced. But also he goes out, and the two players they pick up are Mitch Morton. And Jordy McMahon, they're the players that Terry Wallace chooses to recruit. And I think you reap what you sow.
So I completely agree with your overall thesis. You know, if the coach is making your recruiting decisions, shame on you, not shame on the coach. Like Mitch Morton and Jordy McMahon, this team. They were clearly that they were badly chosen players. I know it's easy to say with hindsight, but you know, it is what Jordan McMahon. I remember Jordan McMahon very well because it was such a hotly debated pick, and it was a high pick. He turned out to be a very good player.
Callum Ward.
He was like this for the Bulldogs. There was a fundamental failure of governance whether Wallace pushed Miller into it or it was Miller's idea, Jordan McMahon was for us what he was for the Bulldogs. And Mitch Morton was a later pick, and he was a talented guy. And the commentators rave about what a good player he is. Like he has his moments, but
is it? So all of the star talent on this field, and there's a lot of star talent. Out there, this Brisbane team wins the final. Actually, their last final the following year. So they're not cooked yet. But of all the players running around on this field, the next one to win a premiership is Mitch Morton.
Yeah, so he's not one. The problem is he replicates a lot of the flaws of the players that are already out there. You know, he's a good. He's a bit slow. He's a good attacking player. He doesn't play defence.
He can kick a goal. I I think we should take a moment to appreciate just how poignant it must have been for Richo to interview Mitch Morton after he won the flag. I thought, I don't know, I felt a lot of empathy for him in that moment.
Yeah, because Mitch Morton, he definitely had his moments with the Tigers. I remember defending him on the internet chat groups at the time, but he has 4 disposals in a game where, like, you know, everyone else, like, we have 400 disposals on the game. You know, like, everyone's getting a kick today except Mitch Morton. But on your overall point about the coaching, like, I had a very similar thought that it feels like 2015 Dimmer and Wallace as well, is that they're and a bit like people criticise Chris Scott for now, is that they're trying to coach the team to a win, like will the team to a win through sort of calling every play. Like, you know, it's like they're playing their American football fantasies of the, you know, of you know, sort of directing the team to a win, whereas the genius of the 17-19 Richmond teams is they're highly structured, but then they just let the players play within that structure. And there's one really thing about the Conrad Marshall book is a lot of what Dimmer is sending out at the messages on game day is just, no, try harder. Like, you know, play up, which is, you know, he might as well be doing nothing. He's just sending that out to make himself feel like he's in control. You know, there's not, the team, you can see it when you watch the game. Dimmer doesn't suddenly swing players in different positions, and sort of try to mastermind, shitty style coaching moves. They get out there and they play, and they play well. And the subtle adjustments around that. It's a team that's been micromanaged, I guess, is a way to describe it. And it kind of makes sense because you sort of, as that, yes, they've chosen to be this way, but the team's just not that good, and you've almost got to, you can see why the coach thinks he has to almost sort of fake a win.
Yeah, but I think part of, I mean, it's a bit chicken and egg that he has to coach this way in order for them to win, because the players he's chosen means that he has this type of team.
And this is the key thing with the Wallace era, is would he have been a good coach had he been in a better club with better recruiting? It's hard to know.
It's hard to know. But I think, you know, we've talked about what's the role of the coach in getting the most out of his players. Like, there's a lot of talent on this team, and it doesn't fit together particularly well. But it's got a number of weak links, and so, you know, they're unable to overcome the sum of their flaws. I think Terry Wallace can certainly coach a team to win some games that they shouldn't, but I'm not sure, you know, this is his last coaching gig, so I'm not sure he can build a culture and a sense of team the way that you need him to really to be more than the sum of your parts.
Yeah, look, I think it's...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you sort of... I agree, and it sort of, it doesn't, again, I'm willing to, in some ways, and I don't think he's the easiest person to work with, is some of the male. I do think that, he could have been a very successful coach if you just let him coach and don't let him do a lot of other things and surround him with, like, maybe David King was better as an assistant coach than he was as a commentator, but, you know, and I know he's hardly Robinson Crusoe about this, but you also sort of wonder about who else was in that coaching box.
Yeah, that's a good point. Look, it is, and it's a much smaller coaching box, so the senior coach is much more hands-on. we're about 6 months away from the players leading a rebellion against him.
No, and look, that was a lot of accumulated pressure. It was, you know, he'd been around for a while, yeah. And you know, I mentioned it once or twice on the podcast before, but I will never ever forgive Wallace for sending Richo back out in that SCG game when his hamstring was already shot. So you know, I'm being magnanimous about Terry Wallace, but in no way am I. I'm not saying he was a saint by any means, but I see systemic failure in this team. I see a team that's not as you say, match day has been quite well coached, and weirdly the game style.
Speaking of coaching, what position is Jay Schultz playing?
I don't know. Gee, he's skillful though.
Yeah, he has 18 disposals, eight marks, a couple of shots at goal. He has quite a good game. But I had my notes half back, wing, floating half forward.
No idea.
Honestly, couldn't tell.
No, but it's not. When you watch him, like, it's not actually a huge surprise that he goes on and has a, you know, he has a 66 goal season for Power, and he has.
It's a bit surprising.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, he has four seasons with the Power where he has more than 40 goals. He has a lot of talent.
He certainly has talent, but he's playing a bit in defence. He's playing a bit in attack. He's had a, I think it was 2005, he had that game where he kicked six goals, so he's,
Yeah, we've given up on him as a key forward by this stage. We've decided that Jack's the heir apparent, which
fair enough.
Yeah, like,
even at Jay Schultz's best, he's not as good.
But there's sort of there is a trait that there's a little bit. I mean, Joe Stoltz did have a 68 goal season, 66. But yeah, that was a better
66,
team.
66. Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite a good team, that Port team that year. It's sort of one of those tragedy, sort of part of the Richmond tragedy story of that era, that not talent there, but never quite putting it together in the right moment.
There's a lot of what ifs. I really enjoyed watching Baby Jack play.
Did you notice how loose his jersey was?
He's very skinny.
Yeah, he's so skinny, and he still does a few smart-assy hand passes that are a little bit annoying, and then he does a couple of great things. There's a great moment where you can sort of, the ball's, I think, being kicked to Richo, and Richo's barreling down towards the ball, and he shoves the Brisbane player aside. It actually looks like the umpire these days would pay a free kick against him, but actually Richo did, it was legal. Richo pushed him in the side, not in the back, but the Brisbane player goes flying, and Richo's got the big mitts out to take the, you know, the big power forwards mark, and then Jack just sort of soars over the top of him and plucks it in front of him. It's quite a nice, and kicks the goal. It's quite a nice little young buck, old buck moment.
He's an interesting guy, because like, you can tell he's smart, and he's got a good leap and quite a good mark. But I think you almost forget that this era, Jack Riewoldt, there were some internet warriors. Oh, actually, some commentators as well, to be fair. Yeah, he was saying he was too slow to be a real proper key forward, and he was always going to be a complementary player.
Yeah, and like, and you can see the, he doesn't take that many marks off long leads, but and then football changed, and no one sort of takes those marks anymore anyway. And
But he's pretty good on, the lead. You know, he tortured Liam Jones, what now seems a million years ago, in round one, on the lead. I think it's a, it's it's a lesson for, so Jay Schultz is 4 years older than Jack, but yeah, just how looking at him, Adam Batterson, Jack Riewoldt, all these young key forwards, they're almost impossible to predict.
They are. I mean, the playing key forward has changed the sort of what really matters. Then has I think the era does suit Jack. Also, I'm sure Jack would have been great in the 70s, where I just bombed the ball into you a lot. He would have loved that. But
he has almost identical career statistics to Michael Roach.
Yeah, good one. Also, by the way, Jack's defensive running has definitely got better.
Yeah. God bless. This was, I both really enjoyed watching this game, and I did have a thought that, I'm really glad we don't have to podcast this team every week. That'd kill us.
Oh yeah, like I mean, that game's an absolute classic though, and it's so much fun. And you've just won two classic games in a row, and then next week we just get waxed against quality opposition. And you know, the team finishes with a percentage under. They're unlucky. They finish in 9th, yes, yes. But they do have a percentage under 100. You know, I think it's 97. Like, yeah, as you say, it's a fun team, but it's a flawed team. But
they score a lot. They give up a lot. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, Nick, it has a happy ending because a not small number of those players go on and win a premiership for Richmond.
Yes, although it seems a lot. I'm really sad that we never put a good team around Richo. I'm sure we'll talk about that some more.
Yes. But, lots of good fun and still a great day and good to remember just one of the many story chapters in the Richo story, because it was a lot of fun.
It was. So what are we going to do next week?
Well, I thought we already discussed this. We're doing the
ad.
Sorry, go.
Yep. Well, so the next two we're thinking of are the perhaps Terry Wallace's greatest coaching triumph against Adelaide. I think after that, the week after that, we need a Carlton massacre.
Oh, absolutely. All right.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Target Talk.